Country Life on International Women's Day with Mucol, a farmer-founded Irish company supplying the UK, Ireland and America with world-class innovations for the dairy and beef industry since 2014. Products for farmers, by farmers. See Mucol.com.
And it is International Women's Day. MJ has the night off and it is me, Claire O'Brien, here for the evening. And great to hear so many female voices on Midlands today, taking over the airwaves, as we should do. Tonight on the programme, what is the situation with the Suckler Scheme payment? Is it at risk of a clawback? As discussions continue on the movement of grain from Ukraine, and as we have to become more reliant on our own tillage industry, what does the squeeze on rented land mean for us? And on International Women's Day, is it a good time to be a woman in rural Ireland? But as you heard from the horror in my voice as I read the weather for you there earlier, there are terrible things predicted for the next day or two. It's going to put a stop possibly to a little bit of sowing for the next day, although some of the hardy books out there will continue probably with the ploughing. But Cathal Nolan of Ireland's Weather Channel and road native indeed joins me on the line. Cathal, you're welcome to the programme.
Pleasure to have me on. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Tell me, what are we actually looking at on the ground over the next couple of days?
I suppose on the ground over the next couple of days, really the main event that we're going to focus our attention on is certainly going to be tomorrow. As we go through tonight, we are likely to see outbreaks, I suppose, of sleet and snow spreading from the south of the country up across the Midlands. Now with that, what's likely to happen is this band of sleet and snow, and I think predominantly we'll probably focus over the Midland areas, at least certainly for most of the Midlands, but certainly across the North Midlands in particular. Here we're likely to see the heaviest of the snowfall. And again, as this system essentially stalls over the Midlands tomorrow, twists, pivots and then pulls away to the east, we are likely to see, I believe, upwards of 10 to 15 centimetres in some parts.
And
potentially 10 to 15 centimetres of snow tomorrow, I think, in some parts. Certainly in areas, if you have, I suppose, difficult to forecast about this particular system is just how cold the temperatures are going to be, and that makes a big difference in terms of what we see. So any areas that are above about 100 to 150 metres, here it's almost guaranteed that you will see between about 10 to 15 centimetres tomorrow. Anywhere below that altitude, so some of the lower lying parts of the Midlands, it's still very much touch and go as to whether it will fall predominantly as wet snow or actually snow that will start to really accumulate. So in general, what we're expecting to see is spells of snow tomorrow across parts of the Midlands, with depths of between 10 to 15 centimetres and a little bit higher over high grounds.
10 to 15 centimetres is a lot of snow. That is stopping you in your tracks, stopping you get out the front door kind of snow, is it?
It would be disruptive snow, certainly in the case of the Midlands, I suppose. A lot of the rural roads at that particular point in time, it would be quite difficult to get to and from. Any of the roads that certainly aren't treated. That would seem to be the general consensus for tomorrow, looking at the models this evening. As you said, it's very much touch and go, but they have kind of receded away from the idea that this system would push directly up and push too far north and allow warmer air in. It looks as though the cold air will remain in place across much of the Midlands for tomorrow. And if anything, then as we go through tomorrow evening into tomorrow night and that system pulls away, the colder air starts to dig back in again. So even if we were to see a couple of hours where it transitions back into sleet, it's likely to then turn to snow again with further accumulations tomorrow evening and tomorrow night.
I have to say I'm still caught at 10 to 15 centimetres of snow. And I'm looking at the warnings that are in place, and they're yellow warnings. 10 to 15 centimetres of snow sets off red alarm bells in my ears.
Probably not red alarm bells. Looking at those quantities, that level of snowfall, probably certainly warrants an orange, I think. I believe probably as we go into tomorrow, certainly as we get to tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening, I think those weather warnings will gradually be updated to an orange. You could argue that's a little bit late at that particular point in time. I think certainly there's some parts of the Midlands which will see status orange warranted conditions tomorrow.
Okay. This is a tough question to ask, I suppose, in ways, but over the last 12 to 18 months, we've had a lot of warnings about potentially really bad weather that haven't really come to pass. And I wonder if people have a little bit of status yellow, status orange fatigue. How disruptive, how reliable, how much can we rely, I suppose, on the potential disruption tomorrow? How much should we be planning for it?
I suppose with regards to previous events, there is a little bit, let's say, of a tendency when we issue the status yellow weather warnings. For example, for high wind warnings. In the Midlands, in particular, we are that little bit more sheltered when it comes to strong winds. So typically, if we see status yellow countrywide warning issued, it's basically a blanket yellow warning on account of the risk of maybe some stronger winds. For the most cases in those scenarios, it's probably unlikely that we will see really appreciable or noticeable in the Midlands. So there is a tendency maybe for a little bit of fatigue to set in. With regards to tomorrow's conditions, at this particular point in time, certainly the North Midlands, I believe we can, it's almost guaranteed that we will see pretty heavy snow in these particular parts, and it's likely to cause some disruption in terms of, as you said, travel, getting to and from.
That's Westmeath, kind of Longford area you're talking about there.
Certainly Westmeath, Longford, they are going to experience heavy snow tomorrow. It's a little bit more touch and go for Offaly, but even here again, I do expect to see some heavy snow, and the same in Laois as well. Regardless, I think even in the South Midlands, let's say, it will certainly start off with snow. It could transition back to sleet for a little while, and that would bring down some of the accumulations, but it's likely to turn to snow again as we go through the evening hours, and then that would kind of bump back up those. So I really, if you're asked to give me my honest opinion in terms of what we will see tomorrow, I do expect to see the conditions being slightly worse than perhaps they are forecast at the moment, okay, with regards to a status yellow warning.
All right, so then between, I mean, when we count precipitation, I'm curious about this, 10 to 15 centimetres of snow, when that melts and then you have sleet and then, you know, sleet on top of that and possibly rain as well, what impact is that going to have in terms of the amount of water that is actually there?
I suppose in terms of the amount of water, so when you melt that down and then when you have like excessive precipitation on top of that again, really, the can often at times, especially if you've gone through a particularly wet spell, it can lead to some issues with regards to flooding. Now, thankfully, at the moment, in the lead up to this particular event, we have had below average rainfall for a little while. So in that particular regard, I don't think we'll see too much in the way of flooding on account of this. We'll certainly bring up the certainly water levels in the drains or ditches, especially in, let's say, poorer lands. But even, I suppose, on account of the precipitation falling, probably fall in the snow, as we said, and then the likelihood over the weekend that we will see some heavier rain. We could see some water starting to line fields again for a time. That will certainly decrease that water deficit if they are there at the moment. They're pretty much neutral, I think, at the moment in terms of what the deficits are at. So we could start to see a little bit of saturation starting to come back into the soil over the course of the weekend and maybe into next week if we retain those unsettled conditions. But I don't think anything too untoward at this point in time.
Okay, so it's basically snow tomorrow, ice on Friday, rain on Saturday.
That seems to be the 3-day forecast.
Colin Nolan of Ireland's Weather Channel, if it was only as simple as all of that. Thank you so much for talking to us on the programme this evening. So there you have it. I don't know about the rest of you. And those of you who are in big four-wheel drives and in tractors, you don't mind the snow. But the rest of us, we have to get around on normal days and go to work in automobiles and travel on regular roads and don't have our ATVs and all kinds of things underneath us. Certainly for this driver, the prospect of snow and ice on the road is just horrifying. In any case, we're going to take a break very shortly, in which time you'll have a chance to root out the thermal vests and the galoshes and all of those things that you'll need for tomorrow. I want to let you know that Minister Pippa Hackett, just down the road, is welcoming the beginning of the gloss balancing payments ahead of schedule, and they're coming out to 36,500 farmers. She says that the fact that these payments are beginning ahead of schedule is a tribute to the work of all involved and is a help for farmers' cash flow. And she says she's glad to say that the department has an excellent record on this in recent times. Gloss payments are an important recognition of participating farmers' contribution to environmental achievements. And it's Claire O'Brien here this evening sitting in for MJ, who is enjoying International Women's Day. One of the stories in tomorrow's Irish Farmers Journal is about how the expansion of solar farms is having an impact on land prices. We'll be talking about land prices, in particular how the squeeze on land is having an impact on tillage. We'll be doing that a little bit later on the programme. But for now, I'm joined by Adam Woods of the Irish Farmers Journal. He is the livestock editor. And Adam, first of all, congratulations, because you predicted a couple of weeks ago that the attempt by factories to put a squeeze on cattle prices wouldn't hold, but it has turned out there weren't enough cattle out there. And that's good news for some people.
Yeah, Claire, look, sometimes when you look into the crystal ball, it comes out right, but there's a lot of unknowns in the cattle industry. But yeah, it's great for farmers. I suppose factories tried it last week, but to be honest, at the moment, it's just a basic, simple supply and demand. The cattle aren't out there, so farmers dug in last week. Factories tried to get to 515, But they're back up this week to 520 and 25, which is great for farmers, because these next 2 months are the dearest 2 months of the year in terms of finishing cattle. So farmers really need that.
Speaking of finishing cattle, you had a really interesting piece last week on how the number of cattle finishers in the country has drastically reduced. Give us the figures on that.
Yeah, so we got some data, access to some data on looking at herds across the country, just how the beef industry is really changing. And really, we have 13,000 people exit slaughtering cattle over the last 10 years. A lot of those have been smaller finishers. So 0 to 25 cattle have dropped off considerably during that time. And that's a case, I guess, of some farmers exiting the system, exiting the finishing system. But it's also some farmers choosing the mart as an option to sell and finish cattle as opposed to going to the factory. We've seen in the last 2 years unbelievable prices basically in marts that factory agents around mart rings are given over and above what those animals are worth in the factory. So I guess smaller farmers have seen that and they said, I'll go to the mart instead of going to the factory. On the other end of the scale, we've seen a massive multiplication of the number of animals being finished in larger herds. So over 1,000 animals. We've seen the number of herds finishing over 1,000 animals rise from 78 in 2012 to 160 in 2022. And those 160 herds slaughtered on average 2,500 cattle in 2022, which is massive numbers. If you multiply that out by a 390-kilo carcass, multiply the average beef price in 2022, you're looking at 5.1 million of sales out of each of those herds. So it's just a factor, I guess, of factories honing in on those bigger suppliers and really looking after them and saying, look, we need big numbers here. We need to concentrate on a few larger suppliers. And that gives us greater control and greater certainty in the market. And I guess it's just economics of scale after that. Phil O'Neill would argue that that's a good way for the beef industry to go. I would argue that it's not. I think when you put a lot of power into a few people, it could have implications in the future.
And when you talk about those 160 herds, how many of those are, do we know how many, if any, of those are actually owned or run particularly for factories?
So we have about 20 of those that are slaughtering over 5,000 animals in 2022. And we're fairly confident that those are either factory-owned feedlots or they're closely aligned to factories. That could be maybe leasing a yard, putting animals through another herd number, or very, very closely working in conjunction with a factory, because 5,000 animals and over 5,000 animals is a huge number of animals. So 20 herds there, but a lot of those 160 will be in weekly contact with the factory. And I guess they can turn on the tap very quickly, or they can stand off quite quickly as well, because they're in close. And look, they're on a forward price. We've been calling for forward prices and contract prices for finishers for a long time. But those 160 are on those forward prices, because they wouldn't be dealing in those numbers if they weren't. No. So I guess that's an elite group and it's the chosen few.
And what is the implication of that? Because I imagine when people are, particularly internationally, I suppose, when they're looking at the Irish traded beef product, they're not imagining feedlots. They're thinking of happy cattle out in fields and small farms.
Yeah, there is that. But I guess all this beef is quality assured. It's coming from really, really high standards. A lot of it will be finished indoors, yes. But a lot of our animals now probably get a small, short indoor finishing period anyway, even on smaller farms. But I guess the part that sort of galls me is really, really frustrating for other farmers standing around a mart ring and maybe looking at some of these 160 people and thinking they're on 50 or 60 cent more, and yet I'm competing with them to buy cattle in the mart. So it's really an unlevel playing field, and that's really, really frustrating. And I had calls this week from people finishing 500, 600, 700 cattle, saying, "Look, what am I doing here? I'm investing hundreds of thousands of euros every year, but yet the factory isn't willing to sit down with me to talk about a forward price." And really, they're very, very frustrated about that.
So is there a long game here then, Adam? And if so, who is playing it?
Yeah, I think factories. I guess if we cast our minds back to 2019, to the factory protests at factory gates, they had huge implications of getting cattle in through their gates at that time. And they were dealing with a lot more, maybe smaller finishers and a lot more numbers of finishers. And I'd say the strategy at that point was to say, look, folks, we need to tighten the net here. We need to deal with less people and bigger people to make sure that we can get continuity of supply and we have foresight of supply as well. Because if they know that we've maybe 100 cattle a week coming from a certain farm, they can plan that out. They know the type of cattle that's coming. They can plan out in sales. They can plan out in exports and international sales. Whereas smaller finishers, I guess, are coming in maybe with three or four. There's probably no foresight on that when those three or four cattle come. So it's good business from a factory's point of view. But as I said earlier on, I'd be a little bit worried about placing so much power in the hands of a few. And for example, those 160 finishers, we'll say there's 40 of those dealing with a factory, because there's four major factories in the country. If, for example, a factory said for 1 week, look at, pull out of the marts there, stay out of the market, I don't want you buying cattle for this week till we see, can we do something to the trade? They'd have massive implications on the trade for 1 week if a couple of those people, because they're buying huge numbers of cattle. So if they don't go to a mart, trade crashes, and then you're starting off from zero again in terms of a cattle price. So look, it's hard. I don't know how it's going to be policed in terms of, we can't, I suppose, police it, but I know for an image, it's just it maybe sends out the wrong message to some of our importing and exporting countries around the small finishing farm and the grass-based finishing farm.
Does it send out a message, finally, on this topic to Charlie McConnell, Logan? Is he listening, and is there anything he can do?
Yeah, I think that food ombudsman, it's all about transparency, Claire, and we've really poor transparency in the beef sector. We've no idea as regards what price those 160 people have been paid. We've no idea of those forward contracts. We've no idea on the contract prices. And we need more transparency in the sector. And I think maybe possibly that ombudsperson will hopefully have a role there in terms of creating more transparency in the sector, because I think farmers then would have a lot more confidence in the system if there was more transparency in it.
Okay, well, that was last week's news. And one of the things I love to do on a Wednesday night when I'm sitting in this seat is to get tomorrow's news today. And you have another big story in tomorrow's paper about suckler schemes. Tell us about it.
Yes, so this is the new suckler carbon efficiency programme. A lot of talk about this in terms of the new programme, new replacement of BDGP. You know, 250 million in funding over the next 5 years. So it's big, big stuff for suckler farmers. But there are some issues with it. The main contentious issue has been the requirement for farmers who are going to join the scheme to join the Board B Quality Assurance Scheme. And that's hugely frustrating for a lot of farmers, because a lot of farmers would see themselves, you know, suckling to weanland farmers, they're not going to be slaughtering cattle, so they don't see a benefit to joining that scheme. So we carried out a survey a number of weeks ago, and 75% of respondents, the Irish Farmer Journal survey, said that we don't think you should have to join Board BIA to join that scheme. So it's unclear yet as to how that's going to implicate numbers joining the scheme. I know within the Department of Agriculture they're a little bit worried about getting numbers. They're really targeting 20,000 farmers. Whether they'll get that, I guess, is another question. There's another hugely contentious issue around cows being born on farms in 2023 and need to be, 80% of them need to be by a 4 or 5 star sire. So if you think about it, these cows went in calf in 2022. When I guess people were outside of the scheme, but the calves are being born in 2023, and it's on those calves that you're going to be, the rule is going to be applied. So IFA and other farm organisations are saying this isn't fair, because farmers would have put cows in calf in 2022 without knowing this rule was coming. So they're looking to get that changed. I understand that could be changed, and it's really important, I guess, from the start. This is due to open in the next few days, that farmers don't get their backs up and the wrong messages sent out. This is a really important scheme. It's €150 a cow for the first 10 cows, €120 a cow after that. It's really important that farmers sit down, look at the terms and conditions and assess whether it suits their farm, because you can listen to all the commentators and say, oh, this is wrong and that is wrong. Nobody's opinion matters on this one except your own opinion on how it will work on your farm. And I'd urge farmers just to give it the time it needs over the next 2 or 3 weeks before the application closes in May.
So maybe go and talk to your Chagask advisor, would you? Is that something that you'd recommend, or your producer group or whatever groups you're involved in?
Exactly. And look, we're going to have a lot of coverage in the Farmer Journal. I know we've got a lot of coverage this week on it. We're going to have a lot of coverage over the next few weeks in terms of answering farmers' questions. Also, the Department of Agriculture are going to run 10 information meetings around the country. And actually, the first one is in your region. It's in Mullingar on Tuesday, the 21st of March, where the department will be there, ICBF will be there to answer farmers' queries and questions, and I guess have it out on the floor, basically, around the terms and conditions of the scheme to make sure farmers understand what the scheme is all about.
Do they not know that farmers are calving cows this time of the year?
Yes, exactly.
Speaking personally here.
There might be one or two of them, maybe webinars or whatever that people can log on. But yeah, you're right, it's a really busy time, but I guess the 15th of May is the closing date for all EU schemes, so they've just got that short window to get in there. So look, it's important to, if you can, to get to one of them. There'll be 10 of them around the country.
So Mullingar on the 21st of March is the one that's close to us.
Yeah, the one that kicks off, yeah.
Okay, Adam, thanks a million for talking to us this evening and for fighting the good fight there. We'll let you back to the evening job, and we'll talk to you again on the programme, and thanks for chatting to us this evening.
Thanks, Claire.
Thanks a lot. And that is Adam Woods, who is the livestock editor at the Irish Farmers Journal. Tomorrow's news today, and you're listening to Country Life with me, Claire O'Brien, sitting in for MJ. A little later on the programme, we'll be talking to Louise Lennon, who is the policy officer with Irish Rural Link, and we'll be asking, is this a good time in 2023 on International Women's Day to be a woman in rural Ireland? That's one of the things we'll be chatting a little bit later on in the programme. Earlier, we were talking to Cathal Nolan about the weather, and you know that the ploughing will probably continue over the next couple of days, even if the slowing is going to slow down in the bad weather. But where are we with prices for tillage? Markets are lower now than they were when, well, certainly lower now than last year's final prices, bumper prices they were indeed, than they were. But the inputs are still on the high end. And I'm joined this evening by Leash Woman, Siobhan Walsh, who is the Irish Farmers Journal tillage editor indeed. Siobhan, you're welcome to the programme.
Evening, Claire. How are you?
Not so bad at all. So one tillage farmer said to me last year, we got the highest price in a generation and it saved the day and we made a few quid. Now the price is down, but the inputs are high and not knowing where exactly things are going to go. Where are things in terms of price going out and coming in?
Yeah, look, Claire, like in one way, we're still at record prices. You know, we never saw prices like this before until last year, but we have returned to pre-war levels on those prices. So, you know, take for instance, Glanbia came out last week with their green feed barley price for harvest. That was down to 220 last week for barley. So we're back to levels that were there last February before the war in Ukraine. And I suppose there's little activity in the market at the minute. So like the price that I would watch is the French wheat price for next December. And if you look at that started the year at about €290, it's down to €272 now. That's for dry wheat. So the bottom has fallen out of the market at the minute, and it's only going one way. There isn't demand there. People have a lot of expensive grain in store, and they're not inclined to buy at the minute. They want to get grain at lower prices. People who have barley in sheds now, I know there's a lot of farmers across the country who still have grain in sheds, and for that wheat and barley, you're looking at kind of 270, 290 is where that's at. So grain prices are dropping, and of course fertiliser prices are still high. And when everyone's talking about, you know, fertiliser prices might drop, in my area, in tillage farmers have to buy now. As you said, there's people out ploughing, there's people out sowing, and unfortunately I think that price drop isn't just going to come in time for those farmers, and they just have to make a move and purchase. So they're still looking at compounds at the minute of, you know, 850, maybe, you know, maybe a bit lower, maybe 830, 840. But certainly they're buying at high prices. And I suppose a lot of tillage farmers did buy fertiliser last year, you know, back in September, October. So they're stuck with those prices. But if you haven't your fertiliser bought, I suppose, hold out as long as you can and see can you get some of that drop in, because, you know, grain prices are falling and we're still not there on fertiliser. So just to be positive as well, Bortmont did come out last week with a fixed price for barley. So farmers could choose to fix 20% of their barley at €300 a tonne. I mean, that's a really good price at the minute when you think that's €80 over your feed barley. So, you know, I think that's something farmers should have strongly considered last week. I hope some farmers did, because when you're getting €80 over your feed, it's certainly something to think hard about.
Okay. I know your colleague Amy is doing a lot on fertiliser in tomorrow's paper, but what is the reason why hasn't it gone down?
I don't know the answer to that, Claire. You know, fertiliser prices have gone down across Europe and prices are going down. You know, prices are going down for bulk fertiliser that's going into the manufacturers. But I suppose people have a lot of fertiliser on stock as well and you know, have bought that fertiliser at high prices.
Yeah.
And there's certainly a bit of a stalemate there. There's a bit of a standoff between farmers And, you know, farmers, in fairness to them, are standing strong on those prices at the minute. They're holding out for as long as they can. I'm just looking at the prices Amy Ford has in the paper this week. Like Leinster, you're looking at urea around 841. These are prices that came from the ISA. Can at 762 and 18612 at 850. So, look, at the minute, farmers can stand off and try not to purchase, but they can also think about sensible things that they can do to bring down their fertiliser, their spend. You know, so urea is a really good option there at the minute. Like urea, if you divide that out and think of the price per kg, you're looking at urea being about a euro under a can. Like, so, you know, people need to consider things like that. Can they get a source of organic manure somewhere else to replace some of their P and K? Can they use their slurry more efficiently? You know, we've no problem with warm weather at the minute. But, you know, try and use your slurry. Like, there isn't great growth out there at the minute.
No.
It's going to snow tomorrow. You know, don't be spreading slurry in bad conditions. Don't be spreading your fertilizer when it's not appropriate, you know. And look at things like urea. And if people are thinking of moving to urea, just be very, you know, think about urea is a lighter product than can. Most people would be used to spreading can.
Mm.
So if you're spreading at widths kind of over 18 metres, certainly over 20 metres, there is a risk that you're not going to spread as wide with urea, and you just need to make sure that your spreader is working correctly and things like that. But certainly it's hard to look past urea at the minute in the way of nitrogen. You know, if we're looking at urea or a can at 800 euro a tonne,
yeah,
it's costing about 2.96 per kg,
okay,
and then you look at urea and it's 1.95. So there's a euro in the difference there. So people have to think of things like that.
Okay, and then taking that story kind of out a little bit and then bringing it back in, we know that today the Vladimir Zelensky and the UN Secretary General have been calling for a deal allowing Russian and Ukrainian wheat and fertilisers to be exported through the Black Sea. They want that deal to be extended because Russia doesn't intend at the moment to allow that to happen. And we're in a great position here in this country, or parts of it at least, and certainly parts of this part of the country, where we could invest in tillage and yet, you know, and do something about our own food security. But yet it's getting harder and harder and harder for tillage farmers to access land. What proportion, do you know, of tillage land is rented on average?
So I suppose about maybe half of tillage land would be rented. And this year we've done a lot of surveys. We've a lot of coverage in the paper this week about land going out of tillage production. And we did a survey last week. About 100 farmers took part in it. And 37% of those surveyed had lost land, and they had lost it because they could no longer afford to pay the price that the land went for. And 65% of those farmers lost that land to dairy. Another 15% lost it to other tillage farms, and 5% to beef. And then really worryingly, there, half of the farmers that were surveyed said that they didn't think that they'd hold on to leases that are due to expire at the end of 2023. So we're seeing all these things go on in the world, you know, and we need to become more food secure. And we're hearing Minister Charlie McConnell talking about it, increasing the area of tillage. But everything that's happening at the minute in Irish agriculture is pointing towards a decrease in the area of tillage. And anecdotally, you know, it certainly looks like that decrease is going to come. So while tillage area has steadied and increased over the last 3 years, increased by 6% last year, it certainly looks like it's going to decline in 2023. And, you know, dairy farmers at the minute need more land. They either need to cut their cow numbers or they need more land to spread their cow numbers over a larger area. And that's playing into the loss in tillage area hugely, because, you know, tillage farmers had a good year last year, but dairy farmers really had a bumper year, and they can afford to pay for the land. And I'm sure, well, most of them don't want to have to pay for that land. They'd prefer if the rules were more sensible. They're going out and doing it because they don't want to drop their cow numbers. And as a result, tillage farmers just can't compete. You know, we asked farmers in that survey how much can they afford to pay for land. And most of them, you know, it was 200, 250 and 20% said they could pay 300 at a maximum.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just not in that scale. When you look at prices, you know, land going for over 400, over 500 and even over 600 in places, tillage farmers simply can't compete. And as a result, the area is declining there. So, you know, tillage needs help at the minute. It needs action. And we have plenty of coverage on this in the paper this week.
Yeah. And finally, just to pull all of that together, I mean, we look at the food vision and the situation that we have in Ukraine. It seems incredibly short-sighted that the department and the minister haven't really tuned into this.
Yeah,
you know, the impacts of all of this. This doesn't seem to be a lot of joined up thinking when you look at how tillage is really being squeezed here.
Absolutely not. So we have the feed imports on the tillage pages this week. We just did up, so the barley, maize and wheat that came into Ireland in 2022, and the majority of that would be used in animal feed, a small amount in drinks production. But our maize imports, Claire, they're almost at 1.6 million tonnes. They would have been at 1.2 in 2021. So we're back to levels that we saw in 2018 and 2019 when there was extreme drought and other extreme weather conditions at play. So it just seems nonsensical for us to be increasing our imports with everything that's going on. And some of the reason that maize figure increased this year is because, you know, the government said we need to stock up on animal feed. We don't know what's going to happen due to the war in Ukraine, and we need to have stocks there. But surely, you know, there was a National Fodder and Food Security Committee set up, and that committee, it's to meet again in the next few weeks. But surely, you know, trying to secure the area tillage has to be top of the agenda there in order to make us in some way. We're never going to be self-sufficient. We're never going to feed the national herd, but we need to have a bigger supply of native grain in this country.
And finally then, I suppose, on the environmental issues, to be importing maize when we can grow it here ourselves, there's an environmental impact in that as well as a financial impact for people's pockets. It seems bonkers.
Yeah, look, tillage is very good environmentally. We've the lowest carbon footprint of the agricultural sector. We're at about 2.2 tonnes per hectare. So we can produce barley and wheat. We're among the top yielders in the world for barley and wheat. So it really makes sense for us to grow crops here. But that whole sustainability thing is coming into focus there. Like at the National Tillage Conference last January, Frank O'Mara said, he said, I have it here in front of me, the fact that we import a lot of grain is often seized upon by people who say we don't have a sustainable livestock sector here in Ireland. And I think, you know, we have to really start to think about it. If we're importing 1.6 million tonnes of maize and selling our products across the world as Irish, you know, Irish beef and Irish milk, you know, it'd be great if we could have, you know, instead of saying grass-fed, if we could say Irish-fed, you know, that those animals, we won't be able to do it for all the herd, but if we could do it for some of it and say, you know, this is Irish-fed milk and, you know, it's made from all Irish ingredients, that would be really something, and it would go towards helping tillage farmers' pockets.
Siobhan Walsh, tillage editor at the Irish Farmers Journal, thank you for speaking to us this evening.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on the programme and always great to talk to women at the absolute top of their game, like Siobhan. We had a text in there from Jim to say that Irish wheat quality depends on good weather, which can't be guaranteed in this country. And of course, absolutely, he is right. And I suppose the diversification, I suppose also the increase in winter wheat and winter barley that we've seen shows that there, you know, there are varieties maybe that are able to hack the weather, that don't necessarily require the long summer maybe that the later varieties require. Not my area of expertise, but that might be an angle on that. But absolutely right, Jim, and thank you for contacting us on 083 3010 103. Is it a good time to be a woman in rural Ireland? Louise Lennon is the policy officer with Irish Rural Link. Well, Louise, is it?
Hello, Claire. How are you?
I'm very good.
Happy International Women's Day to you and all your listeners.
And the same to you.
Yeah, so going back to your question, is it a good time to be a woman in rural Ireland at the moment? I think it has improved a bit, but I think there's still a long way to go yet. You know, that we have that parity, I suppose, with men. And I suppose in certain sectors it's better than others. We know in the agricultural sector, I suppose it's we still only have 13% of farm holders are women, even though they do a good chunk of the work on the family farms. So I suppose getting better recognition for that could improve it. I suppose there's a lot of opportunities out there as well for women, and I suppose even, you know, if you veer off from the main agricultural sector, you know, agri-food, agri-tourism, I think there's a lot of opportunities for women, you know, to start up businesses there. But again, it goes back to having the right supports and having the access to, I suppose, any training they may need any upskilling or you know, access to finance and different supports.
And one of the things that Irish Rural Link is involved in is there's an EU project coming up, isn't there, on digital entrepreneurial skills for women?
Yeah, we're involved in, it's an Erasmus Plus funded project where over a year into the project now, and it's focusing on women in rural areas and improving the digital skills for women entrepreneurs in rural areas and helping them to, I suppose, you know, take advantage maybe of online business and moving their business online or you know, having parts of their business online. So we're at the stage now where we're finalising modules for that, and over the coming months we'll be doing training on that or testing and validating those modules, and then it will be available on the project website.
Fantastic.
As I said, there's a lot more to be done, and I suppose addressing a lot of the barriers that women have, especially I suppose marginalised groups of women living in rural areas, that, you know, access to transport continues to be a big issue, and access to broadband and childcare as well, and I suppose taking on that, you know, the caring role still kind of falls back on women as well. So, you know, having the time to take up training or do training in the evening isn't always possible either. This project, the modules are kind of focused, they're self-learning, so you can go on your own time and be able to access the modules yourself at your own time, and you don't need to do them. You can pick whichever ones you need.
Yeah.
You know, that you want to look at.
Irish Rural Link is connected with about 600 community groups, and women play a huge role in those community groups. Are they recognised for the work they do?
I don't think to the extent they should be. Like, I mean, a lot of the work is invaluable that they do. Like, we have a network of Meals and Wheels organisations across the country. Again, a lot of it is dependent on volunteers. A lot of those volunteers are women. Women are running and organised the Meals and Wheels. That service is invaluable to anyone using it. It's like more than just the meal. It's, you know, having that human contact contact, but it also helps to alleviate a lot of the pressure that's on the health service at the moment, you know, prevents hospital admissions, and I suppose it allows for early discharge from hospitals as well.
Yeah.
So it's going to become more important as well over the coming years, with an ageing population, and having, you know, home care services and caring for people in their homes, which is, you know, government
which is so
policy.
Important. Absolutely.
it's so important. So I think those placing more value on those, you know, caring jobs as well is going to, it will need to become part of the government's agenda.
Okay.
And having more value placed on those jobs that you know, women can, you know, work in it and earn a living out of it.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully the planned referendum on the role of the family might bring about some change there. Louise Lennon, thank you so much for talking to us from Irish Rural Link. A lot done and more to do, I think, is the message there. We're just at the end of the programme. It is my first time on Country Life since the summer, and I want to pay tribute this evening to two men who were in my time presenting on the show, were very important to the great friends of Country Life. The late Pádraig Walsh, who was the former president of IFA and an erudite campaigner for farmers' rights in Laois, in the Midlands, in Ireland, on the international stage. And also the late Joe Parlin, who was a great friend of Country Life on Offaly issues, on local issues in agriculture, and representing Offaly farmers. Their loss to the communities, to their friends, to their families, and to the farming world is absolutely immense. And a few years ago, I did a long and wonderful interview with Juliette Green, who is the wife of the first president of IFA, Juan Green. And I asked her what it was like to be known as what was known at the time as an IFA widow. She was at home while her husband was, you know, kind of beating the roads, representing farmers, going to meetings. And many wives and partners of those who represent farmers know what it is like to be home alone when their other half is campaigning or at a meeting or advocating for other farmers. And Juliette told me it was very much part of the job. But she also soberingly said that as a widow, as an actual widow, thinking about temporary absences in the job was trivial and insignificant. So tonight, Country Life sends our best wishes and our thanks and our deepest sympathies on behalf of all farmers to Ella Walsh and to Mary Parlin for sharing their husbands with us. Indeed, to all of the farming women who have lost a spouse since this day last year. We are so sorry for their losses. MJ will be back in this seat again next week. Joe is here after the news with the best of Irish and American country music. Indeed, he's not here after the news. We have another woman for International Women's Day. Gadishin, Toga Bugge, Agus Ihoa.